Maybe it's because I'm deep in house alterations. I read today's readings and it's all about building. If you like building, this is going to be high interest. And at a certain point, Chris Morris will hear tones of Pink Floyd. When that happens, Chris, would you put your hand up, please? You can dance too. So I'm going to be talking about rocks and stones as they appear in today's readings, because boy, they speak to us. The rocks speak to us. And God the builder, not Bob, God the builder. Rocks, stones. Boy, since I came to live in Dunedin, I've had a lot to do with them. You know, the Netherlands is one big delta. It's all sand and silt. And I come to Dunedin and it's all this basalt and rock. So the last few years have kind of been a coming to grips with it, holding this stuff. And we know the characteristics: hard, stable, and heavy. Bit like the sermon this morning: hard, stable, and heavy. You might have wanted something about cotton wool or chocolate, but not today, folks. But stay with me, because God's word is speaking to us through this imagery of rocks, stones, building. And I'm going to be linking the theme a bit, but it's going to zero in at a certain point. So we begin with something relatively simple, but very painful: the stoning of Stephen, as we heard from Acts 7. Stephen was stoned for his faith in the communal fashion of ancient Israel, which meant once he was condemned, everyone got to pick up a rock and throw it. Why should the executioner have all the fun? It was a communal activity. Just to ground it, the closest thing I can think of here is taking funerals in some places where, when it came time for, once the casket was lowered, several people picked up shovels and buried. And symbolically, it went down to throwing some petals on. It's a participation in a communal event. Stephen's execution was like that. And we're told the details of how the cloakroom worked. They laid the cloaks, because it was hard work throwing stones to kill a person. People get very excited, very sweaty. So they put their cloaks down at the foot of a young man named Saul. When Stephen, full of the Holy Spirit, was struck by the rocks and the stones coming at him, something remarkable happened within him and around him. These rocks are coming like bullets. And he was stripped down to his core foundations. I don't mean he was naked physically, but who he was. It was a powerful, refining moment. Who he really was and what his life really consisted of was laid bare to him and to others with eyes to see. What he revealed and what he witnessed to as the stones flew was the glory of Christ. He saw God's glory and he spoke witness to it. And he revealed that Jesus Christ was his solid personal foundation. You can strip me down, you can knock me down, you can kill me, but you'll just find Christ. The one in whom he truly abided. He is my life. He is my identity. He is me. You take me away, and Christ is revealed. That's inspiring, isn't it? The church's first recorded martyr. And he revealed to his executioners, including one of Saul of Tarsus, who would never have forgotten that day, that there was something harder, eternally stable, and something more enduring than the rocks that were being thrown at him. He witnessed the worthiness of Jesus to our devotion in life and in death. That's why he's a martyr. He showed something. He revealed something. He witnessed to something that no one ever forgot. So Jesus was the rock he took notice of. All these bullets coming in. Jesus is the rock. And he enabled him to stand. We'll return to this later. Then we go to the passage I'm going to be in the most this morning. That's 1 Peter chapter 2. Peter, the rock man, talking about rocks. And it's written by a man who, yeah, was renamed by Jesus as the rock man. And he was written to a church that had already experienced persecution. You know, you can talk about hard times are coming, people, when you're still lying in cotton wool. Or you can write to people who've been there and saying, you know, it's coming back. There's more on the way. That was the church Peter was writing to. So he didn't have to introduce the horrors or the challenges of persecution. And into that dark anticipation, Peter, the rock man, wrote to build them up, to edify them, to give them courage, heart, faith, the ability to stand because it's coming. They needed something hard to support them. They needed to know and knew that God was their rock and their fortress before Rome once again in its fickle manner sent a persecution. So in chapter 2, Peter begins to build them up with solid, wise teaching. First bit's not about rocks. It's actually quite maternal. It's quite gentle. We'll get to the rocks. And he gives them some basic advice. And I'm going here. I'm following this little deviation because I think it's really relevant. Could we have the next screen? There we go. Basically, it's this. Don't poison yourselves or each other. Get your spiritual diet right. Don't poison yourself or each other. Rid yourselves, therefore, of all malice and all guile, insincerity, envy, and all slander. Like newborn infants, long for the pure spiritual milk, so that you may grow into salvation. If indeed you actually have tasted that the Lord is good. Don't poison has given us in Christ to grow into what God has given us in Christ. And for this, we need nourishment, not poison. It's dietary advice. And if we consider the poison listed here, malice and all guile, insincerity, envy, and all slander. Now, these are common human failings. People do people stuff, right? Whether it's over the water cooler or the photocopier, or maybe that's a bit last century, it happens. Been a pastor a long time, and I know it happens big time in churches. Churches can have a constant, steady diet of squabble. Peter isn't writing this for nothing. Get rid of it. If we allow these things a place, because that's the essence of spiritual warfare. You know, a lot of people paint the devil out to be a big, hairy monster. As if you've got to be a sort of a George the Dragon type to go and take him on. The essence of spiritual warfare actually starts a long way back from that. What do you allow to grow in your garden? We've come back from 3 weeks away, and there are weeds all over the place. And they're just starting to seed. What do we have to do? get them before they seed. If I allow them another 2 weeks, 1 year seeding, 7 years weeding. If you allow it to grow, it will take space. That's why Peter's saying, get rid of it. Get rid of it now. You won't stand persecution if you let this stuff grow. The Romans just have to look at you and you'll fall over. These are common human failings, but as I've said, they thrive in many a church garden. By getting rid of this stuff, you will grow into your salvation. By leaving it there, you've poisoned the situation. Now, and then there's this little twist, you know. I never thought of Peter as a guy with any subtlety, but this is a subtle twist. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. A story often told last century about how American federal agents were taught to recognize forgery. Do you know the story? Well, in their training, they were shown real money. And they spent a long time looking at the real thing. Every little detail. And as you know, the production of banknotes has only become more sophisticated. There are holograms and all sorts of subtle tonings in the printings now. You look at the real thing a long time. And then when you see a forgery, you spot it. If you have tasted that the Lord is good, then you can recognize what isn't. And it's almost like a, well, it's almost like sarcasm, isn't it? So this is very simple. This is the introduction. It's all about mother's milk, spiritual milk to get us started. Very simple, direct teaching. So any church of any discernment will understand this, won't it? Yes. So we do it. But just Peter understands this. The talking about, we're on to the second one now, I think. Great, thanks, Stuart. He goes from talking about milk to solids, and he starts to talk about stones. He introduces the risen Christ as a living stone, a living stone. Now, it's a common Scottish surname, I think, but it's actually a very curious phrase, a living stone. Okay, the Greek word is lithos, lithography. It's sometimes referred to in our language. And it suggests a quarried or a dressed stone. So the ancient world abounds in limestone, a bit like Oamaru stone. You cut it out, dress it, make it square, and then you can hand it on to the builder. It's been cut and prepared for use. That's how Jesus is described. And he's cut and prepared for a central role in a very special building. But don't miss the curious thing here. How can a stone be living? Don't just rush over this. Stones stand for everything that is cold, lifeless, even if they can be made from things that were once alive, like limestone. And Peter is doing what the Bible so often does. It's not just Zen who have all the fun. It takes the language and stretches our categories. Stone, dead, cold, hard, living, warm, alive. That's poetry. That's straining the language, blowing our categories a little bit, but trying to convey something to us. That's why being a fundamentalist or a literalist just won't work, because language isn't used that way. If Peter had been Greek, he would have been written an analytical paragraph, but he's Hebrew, so he paints this picture and wants you to grasp what he's saying with a living stone. Come to him. Come to him, a living stone, although rejected by mortals, yet chosen and precious in God's sight. And now you, like living stones, allow yourselves to be built into a spiritual house. This is where I'm going to be for a while. It's really profound. Christ, the living stone, and us. The key to understanding this, I think, is the spiritual house. The spiritual house. And it evokes the sense of a shrine. A shrine is a place where God or the spirit was deemed to live. Many cultures around the world still have that. The temple was Israel's manifestation of that. God was pleased in the subtlety of the language to allow his name to dwell there, because they understood you can't contain God in a building. No, it's not that crude or primitive. But he may be met there. It may be the place where he is pleased to hold an audience. In the Ark of the Covenant, it may be the footstool of his throne. But never think God's actually in there. Never think shrine or temple is a box where, God, we got you. Where we want you. No, it's a gracious condescension. This is the place where I'm prepared to be met. To understand yourselves as such. Understand you, people. The Koinonia Fellowship, the family of God, all these images. As a spiritual house. So Christ, the living stone, us living stones coming to the living stone to be a spiritual house, a place that God associates with, a place where God may be encountered. It's what temples and priesthood are actually all about. And he's saying to this church that's waiting to be cut down by the Roman machine again, understand yourself as such. Recognize that this is what you're in. This is what is your calling and your the essence of what you are as church. God is not looking for a building of stone and precious materials, no matter how beautiful it is. And at this stage, the Jerusalem temple may still have been standing, or it may just have been destroyed by the Romans. God is looking for a people that he can cut, prepare, and position in a living, dynamic arrangement that will enable them, that will enable God to be personally present for his purposes in this world. This is a beautiful picture. I don't know about you, but I'm moved by this. This stirs. And the call is, if you're sitting there thinking, well, what am I supposed to do? The call is, come to Christ, the first living stone, and let him put you where he wants you. No one gets to choose where they are placed. Well, I always fancied myself as a pillar. I'll volunteer to be a pillar. No, 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 no. Jesus, the builder, puts you where he wants you. Interesting, you know, we think of Jesus as a carpenter. The Greek word is actually tectone, where we get technology from, or it's related to that word. Carpentry was just one part of their skill set. He's a construction guy. That would be a better translation. Yeah, you could make your a yoke and a kitchen table, but it can also cut stones for the building project down the road, which is probably where he and Joseph spent a lot of time. A place called Sepphora. It's in visual distance from Nazareth, where there was a big building project going on. And tectones were in demand. So that's the picture. So let's give this consideration. And I couldn't help it, but I got some pictures. So Jesus, the living stone, is the builder of a spiritual house. Rather, his Father is the builder, and Jesus is in there, the living stone. And we're encouraged to present ourselves as stones for that purpose. So let's ask three questions. First of all, have you come to Jesus? Have you come to Jesus? Now, some of you may be thinking, I've been in church all my life, and he's asking me if I've come to Jesus. It must be because of someone else. But seriously, have you come to Jesus on the terms that he asks you to come? So if you haven't come to Jesus as the living stone, if you haven't come to him as a stone yourself, prepared to be cut, shaped, and placed, you haven't come to him. It's not just about having him on the Christmas card. Today, when I go to Countdown or New World, I go to do what I call mail shopping. Get stuff and go. Don't like hanging around. Guys, are you with me on this? It's like, get stuff and go. Here's the thing though. I don't go there to be discipled by Countdown. I don't go there to be transformed by New World. I just go there to get stuff and go. Find what I want and I'm out of there. Now, Countdown and New World have ideas though. Every big company is trying to own its customers in some way. But we won't go there. Now, but the thing is, that attitude of the supermarket we can easily have in relation to church. I go there to get stuff and go. Can be so normal. It's consumerist Christianity, to put a big label on it. And when I've got what I want, I split. I'm out of there. If this is you, and it's not surprising if it is, because out there, the world is shaping exactly this mindset. I don't have to go deep into conspiracy theory to sustain this. You know, subliminal hypnotic advertising has been around since the 60s. And that's just the beginning of it. If this is you, Peter is saying, come to him, a living stone, though rejected by mortals, yet chosen and precious in God's sight. And like living stones, let yourself be built into a spiritual house. It's a very different agenda from Countdown and New World. Well, they're closed on Sunday, so I'll toddle off the church. I'm not saying this is us, but it could be. And it leads to my third question. What will that involve? Count the cost. So we really get into stones now. We've got the first picture up. Familiar place? No, that's the one. Thanks, Stuart. Jim, you know exactly what sort of rock this church is built of. It's Port Chalmers. Okay. Thank you. So over coffee, apparently, John, you've been set up as the go-to person for anyone who wants to know what stone is that? What quarry did it come from? But this church is sort of pointing to this reality of a spiritual house. Do you see yourself in that picture? You see how this church was built? The stones are all individual. They're cut. And the builders, they sort of made it easier on themselves and more structural by making the stones regular. So there are rows to see, aren't there? You may walk around afterwards and think, I identify with this stone. Whether it's a prominent lintel beam covering a Gothic doorway, or just a humble little square, it doesn't matter, as long as you're there. But, well, there's another way of construction. Next picture, please. Or might God be building with us like this, taking us in the raw, the way you built altars in the Old Testament? Never cut a stone on an altar. And the other one, you're taken as you are and put cheek to jowl with someone else. Which would you prefer? Be trimmed down to size? Or do I have to sit next to this person? I'm making light of it. But there's pain here, isn't there? There's challenge. The good news I see in this, next screen, please, is that God doesn't build the world the way the world does. This is where you're supposed to hear Pink Floyd. We don't need no education. We're not just bricks in the wall. That's a brutal process to cut things down and reconstitute as a regular square object. But we need to hear what, just opening this up, we need to still hear Peter so clearly. However it is, whether we're cut in the quarry, trimmed square, or put cheek to jowl in our raw form, let yourselves be built. Let God be the architect and make the choices as to where you are placed in this structure. It's not about you and me as stunning individuals. I'm a rock. Put me somewhere splendid. Feature me. Or I'm so humble, I just want to be down in the basement. Never see the light of day. I'll just be a foundation stone. Whichever it is, it's not like that. It's not about our fulfillment. And it's not even about us as a happy club. It's about being a place where God is pleased to dwell and be found as he designs and builds. And it may not be easy on us. Do we have that sense of God the builder? Do we have that sense of ourselves as stones that get delivered to the site and get placed how and where he wants us? That's a big part of my message. But wait, there's more. And we're told one more very interesting thing about Jesus, the living stone. See, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone, chosen and precious. God has already laid Jesus Christ in a central position as a cornerstone. And in these days of concrete construction, we may not totally grasp this. Thank you, Stuart. You got it. Cornerstones were cut and prepared in the quarry to set up the angle for the whole building. So every other stone took its place from the angle that stone established. The level, angle, the height. It gave strength to the corner. There's a little bit of that technology in this building. It was a costly and expensive stone. Examples of this are really common in the Middle East and archaeology. One example measured 23 meters by 4 meters by 4.3 meters. So the cornerstone is cut, carefully placed. There was two of them there, obviously, and the other stones in their raw form can then be placed around it. The next slide, I think, captures quite well what this passage is saying to us. He was set down in Jerusalem as the chief cornerstone of God's new temple, built of spiritually alive stones, chosen and placed. And that is the picture of who we are to be as a church. And for Peter's pastoral purpose, that is a church that will stand. Christ, the cornerstone, he sets it up. He sets the level, frames the corner. That's good news. All churches should be able to celebrate. Christ is our cornerstone. We look to him. Any question arises, any question about what's level, what's perpendicular, refer to Christ. But there's a health warning that comes with this as we read on. Next screen, please. And whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. Church facing persecution, remember? It's not just abstract spirituality. To you then who believe, he is precious. But for those who do not believe, the stone that the builders rejected has become the very head of the corner. A stone that makes them stumble and a stone that makes them fall. They stumble because they disobey the word, as they were destined to do. So the picture is of the quarry. They've cut a stone out. At some point, no, that stone's no good. It can lie there. There are quarries across the ancient world full of that. Well, this was cut, but left. Why? That's what happened to Jesus. But despite being rejected and left, he was taken by God and placed as the cornerstone. This is the process. People think one thing. God, the architect, God, the builder, has another idea. The warning is this. If people do not come to Jesus as the cornerstone of their lives, as the cornerstone of the church, and allow God to build in his design, there will be clear consequences of a rocky type. And Peter recognizes that people will try and build spiritual houses avoiding Christ. Oh, we don't need all that blood of the cross, and we don't need that all that metaphysical understanding of Christ, and we don't need Jesus, really. He's a nice children's picture book character. Let's have something that's modern, that's fresh, that's contemporary. It was a different approach taken, but the Jewish leaders of Jesus' day were doing something similar. They were building without Christ. And as I've parodied just now, churches try this too. You can try and be a spiritual community without Jesus Christ, but the consequences will be stumbling and falling over him. Now, would Jesus, the nice guy, ever trip someone up? Well, this is saying yes. People will fall over him. And the word used is a word that's come into English. The Greek word literally that causes you to stumble, both by distraction or deception, or it's just in the way and you can't get around it. It's what causes you to stumble and fall into sin. And Peter is saying to us, Jesus is a living stone no one can ignore. You can try to ignore him, but you'll fall over him. Bang. Your face in the dirt. So come to him as the living cornerstone. Come to him as the very foundation of everything. Because if you don't, you'll fall flat on your face over him. So what I've done here, I hope, is faithfully expound or open up the word. There's a bit of application in there. But I really want to leave it with you. What is God saying? What do you hear coming through this? For you personally, for us collectively as a church, or just in general? My questions are, have we come to Jesus? Are we coming to him as the cornerstone? And do we let him shape and place us as he wishes?